This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jenny hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's your friend Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. That time of the week, folks. Coming to you from Trinidad World Recording Studios in Fort Worth, Texas. My recording studio here in Fort Worth. Welcome. We're so glad you could make it here today. My good friend is here with me. The man himself. Friend, confidant, Kurt South. How you doing, Kurt?
Going brown and getting wrong since 2001.
Going brown and getting wrong since 2001. Here he is.
You better believe it.
Continuing it. Of course, a reference there, our last episode, Kurt and I recounted our historical voyage to the Atlantic Ocean to Carolina Beach to play a series of shows, a couple shows out there. Many misadventures out there and a lot of great times.
Yes.
Getting wrong at Bowman's, eating too much shrimp, getting wrong. And, of course, going brown when you switch from beer to Jack Daniels. Going brown and when that can occur, as it did at the Notorious Gringos session and all the partying out there, North Carolina Beach. But back to our current topic here. We're back now in Fort Worth. It was good to get home, though, wasn't it, man? Oh, it's a long drive.
It was.
Through the deep south. Oh, man, yeah. Tough bathrooms. I'm looking for the Alabama version of the check stop. I'm looking for
doesn't exist,
you know, the
friend.
Woody Smokehouse in Monroe, Louisiana. It's not there. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
You know Woody's on 45?
Yeah.
Centerville? Is that Centerville?
Somewhere around,
45. Where you can just go in and get that great turkey jerky.
Yeah,
and they got all the
you
homemade
stuff. Anything in there.
God, you get everything.
It's awesome.
Everything. Good sandwiches. Oh my goodness, my goodness. Tough to find it in the deep south. Maybe I wouldn't. Well, we went into a Kentucky Fried Chicken in Alabama.
I had to draw my pistol. I had to draw my pistol.
There's got to be something down this road. So we get off this interstate. We're just driving. We wind up in some little town down there. Oh, man, it was rough. Holy cow. I'm just like, man, oh, man.
I had to
send a text to my wife. You know, I'm just, I love you. Just
this might
is the last.
Be it.
Yeah, we're just pulling in there. I'm ordering the, of course, they give me, I ordered the dinner.
Yeah.
And they don't give me a fork. So I'm just driving down I-20 in the dark.
Drinking coleslaw.
I'm chewing on a chicken nugget and eating coleslaw with my bare hand. And
that
trying,
was a low
and
point
trying
for
to suck.
Mashed potatoes out
through a straw. That was kind of a low point there. And of course, I was irate. I'm gonna give me a fork, God! You know, I couldn't eat, I couldn't drive, but I knew I had to do both.
Yeah,
that's what separates the men from the boys in this deal, I guess. That's the God. There's no glory in that, though. There's no. It's just kind of like
there's no real payoff.
Phil, have you done it all these years? You know, you never had some huge hit or anything, but you kept going. I go, man, it's just that. When you're in a car with 370,000 miles on it,
and you can eat coleslaw,
but you got
no
some fans waiting for you out there. They're paying you some good money to show up and play. You're getting there, and you know what? You don't have anything to drink. You don't have a fork, but you know it's late. You probably ought to pull it, but you can't. You got to keep going. You got to eat with your bare hands. You just got to keep going.
You got
to
have your road.
It comes down to one thing. Are you going to make it to the show or are you not? Turn around if you can't make it. Call ahead, tell them you're not coming. If you're going to be there, you got to be there. That's the only rule.
You got to have your road partner brandishing weapons.
That's right.
Just
that's
to
right.
get out of there alive.
I can't tell you how many guys have a subbed gigs or, you know, some bass player, drummer, road manager, merch guy or something coming in. I mean, I'll be there. I'll be there. They never show up, you know? Mm-hmm. They don't show up. They're late. They got some reason. Man, it was crazy last week. I'm like, really? Crazy? Wait, what do you mean? What happened? Well, you know, I don't know. I'm sitting here with four kids, and, you know, I'm like, it's not crazy for me. I mean, it is crazy, but that's just part of it.
I digress. Get to the gig.
And they give me this whole deal. I go, look, man, I don't care. I you know, you got to show up. That's all you got to do. You got to be at my house or wherever we're meeting and get in the van. You got to be there. If you can't be there, don't waste my time.
I don't care.
So the guys in North Carolina wanted us there. We were there. Well, our old friend Bob Lefsetz is at it again, Kurt.
What's Bob up to these days?
I'm talking about Bob Lefsetz, the Lefsetz letter. Had a good talk about Bob Lefsetz with our friend Walt Wilkins last week.
Yeah.
At the Lefsetz wrote about Walt Wilkins.
Yeah, he did.
Wilkins was in town with me and Kurt and Max Stalling to play the Care concert, which went great over at the Longhorn. What a great room, the Longhorn, man.
It's awesome, man.
Wow, it was awesome. In the Stockyards. Sunday night, great crowd, great show. Bob Lefsetz is he's in L.A., right? He's an old record executive. And then he writes great stuff. You need to subscribe to the Lefsetz letter. That's Lefsetz, Lefsetz letter. Bob Lefsetz. He just talks about the current state of music, things that are happening that you would never know. You know, he just does he sends you an email for free every day or two about what's going on, whatever's on his mind.
He's a true insider, too.
True insider. I mean, he knows all these managers of all these bands. Everything's fascinating. It's so fascinating. You know, he starts off his most recent email on pricing. Again, a topic he always comes back to. Just how to charge for music. How does anybody make money in music these days? Now, there's no more CDs, catalogs, big advances. Those days are done. What does it mean? He says, if only tracks had cost a nickel or a dime, do you really think everybody would have jumped through hoops to steal them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of goes back to the whole... you know, what is the price point on music?
Yeah.
And his email goes on. He makes a big deal out of streaming sites like Slacker,
Spotify,
Pandora, where you can just kind of dial something up and listen to it, experience it on your machine.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's always putting things in. And, man, I'm always surprised as a Lefsetz and myself, guys who love owning vinyl and all that kind of stuff. But the truth is, I convert the vinyl, you know, and it's on the iPod or something, and then I rarely listen to the iPod.
You don't ever just put records on your record player and listen to them, really.
Man, not as much as you think I should. You know, I probably don't. So his deal is, are people just going to stream music? Of course, you can get the apps on your iPhone now, or where you can just plug it into your car stereo, whatever. And the worst thing about the iPod is that you're just not exposed to new stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I know everything on my iPod backwards and forwards.
I'm so tired of what's in my iTunes.
Yeah, you know, I'm just kind of coming up. I mean,
the streaming. I stream Pandora all the time.
Yeah.
All the stuff I bother to buy off of iTunes, and by the time I've bought it, I already know it backward and forward.
You listen to it a ton for about. Yeah, you just digest the track.
Yeah.
It just becomes part of your DNA if you love it. And when it comes on unexpectedly somewhere in a shuffle, you're like, hey, cool, man, turn it up. But you just don't summon it on your iPod like you think you would.
Nah.
That's weird, man, because I can figure that out. Because I spend a lot of time converting some favorite. I'll get a new record and go, cool. But they're usually things I'm not too familiar with. I noticed I haven't even gotten around to putting like Abbey Road on there. I just know it to them. I don't record the whole damn...
Yeah,
Beatles catalog, and I mean, I know it all. I'm not going to listen to it.
No,
I already know it. You know,
that's what I like about Pandora. That's what I use to stream a lot with, and you know, you have no idea what's coming up next, but you can go in and kind of tailor make it to whatever it is you like, you know, and they'll offer suggestions and stuff they think you like. And
man,
I've found so much new stuff through that. It's just awesome.
It is, man. It's cool. Like, we'll fun thing to do is type Phil Pritchard in there for us or for me, you know, and just kind of see who they compare you to, or, you know, what to throw you in with, you know.
Yeah.
So where I was putting my name in there, and there's all sorts of crazy results come up. Of course, you get, you know, maybe a
Josh Groban comes up.
Yeah.
And Il Divo.
Toto and Devo. No, you know, you get your Todd Snyder, and I'm always thrilled when, like, a Dylan song comes on. I'm like, yeah, man, Dylan, all right, or whatever. So, but, man, so anyway, his deal is just, man, can you just stream, experience? It seemed like you'd have to own something at some point. You'd want to put something on your wall, or you'd want to wear a I don't know. You want to possess, or do you think not? Lefset seems to be thinking no.
You know,
you would
personally,
stream. You would be creative with your playlists, kind of the artist you can custom make. You know, your Gordon Lightfoot station to play like his hits or play like his deepest, darkest basement cuts. You know.
Well, if you've got the iPhone apps for streaming, you know, you can stream on your mobile phone now.
Yeah, that's what J-Dub has in the van. Yeah. We just plug in his iPhone. We never plug in my
What's
iPod.
What's the point in ownership if you can take it with you? You know, the limitations of streaming up to this point were that you had to have a computer.
Sit in front of your computer, yeah, that's right.
But, man, once the mobile phones get on board with streaming apps, there's no point in ownership. I'm not interested in owning all that cool music that I hear on Pandora.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter to me. I just know I can hear it.
Well, that's the most distressing thing for someone like me who makes music or yourself. I don't know if it's distressing. I'm trying to get my head around it, you know, because I totally concur with that. I'm the same way. You mean you're exposed to great music, man, on Slack or Pandora or something like that. When I do hear a cool track, I'm like, man, what is that? Oh, man, this guy, you know, Henry Jones or something, man. He's some songwriter from Maryland. I'm like, dude, that guy's great. And I hear another song and think, that guy's great.
But you don't go
I
buy
don't
the
go
record.
Buy his album. I don't run out to Walmart for crying out loud or go to iTunes and download his whole new
album.
You
can hear all you want of them.
Yeah, I can just dial them up. I'll put them on my list, you know, if I want to listen to them. But, you know, I don't feel the need to own it. You know?
No. Well,
so what does that mean?
It goes back to we had this discussion in an earlier edition of the podcast about you know, the price that you've paid for records in the past is always you're paying for the vinyl record itself,
yeah,
or the CD. That's the product,
the artwork.
The music is the content, and the content should just it. You're not going to be able to monetize it in the future. You're just not. There's so many ways to get around buying the record,
yeah,
or going
that's
to
right.
iTunes. And
but don't you think there'd be like some sort of a pay? See, and Lefsetz is exactly right. If it was cheaper, and I think they will come to some sort of licensing deal with these.
They're going to have to.
They have
they're
to.
Be forced
with Pandora,
to
because, don't then Pandora already have to pay little royalties and things?
Yeah, you get you know if you
pennies
get played,
on a player.
It's just like on a radio station. They keep track of who gets played
right,
how many
right.
times, and you get royalties
It'll
off.
It'll be
that.
Interesting to see how that works though for the classic acts and stuff. Surely, for like Aerosmith, it's just got to be a dagger. You would think they'd get played more on the Spotify.
But they don't because people have heard
people already. It's the same reason I don't listen to my Beatles on the iPod. You're just kind of like, dude, they don't. You
if
know?
You look at classic rock as a whole, you know, whether it's Bob Dylan or the Beatles or Boston or the Eagles, any of those, we know what they've got. I mean, there's a 15-year span where we have been oversaturated with all that music.
There's a word we use every podcast that stuff is what?
Ubiquitous.
Ubiquitous, meaning
so,
you
know,
all know all about it.
And nobody is sitting around looking for the new Aerosmith record. They just want to, if they do want to hear Aerosmith, they want to hear, you know, Dream On or one of their hits, you know.
That's right.
From
that's
30
right.
years ago. So music today is more about discovery of new stuff.
Because there's so much out there.
Because there's
that's
so
the
much
frontier.
Out there. Yeah, there's so
but
much out there.
Will these things, will these great acts that get discovered on Spotify or something, will they see the benefit of that anywhere? Monetarily.
If they, the only way that they'll be able to see that benefit is if they start getting streamed a whole lot.
And Kingfest.
And get the royalties. And then
some
if those
festival
people,
calls them.
If those people choose to pay to see him live, that's about it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but that's the nature of the beast. I mean, if you're counting on your CD sales right now or your iTunes sales to pay your mortgage, and you're probably going to, unless you're moving tonnage, which very few people are.
I haven't
aren't
figured
anymore.
Out how to submit for that stuff.
What do you mean?
How do you get your music on? I mean, I've had some distribution things in the past.
On
so
Pandora?
So the albums they have is something I would have with another guy or something like that, like a compilation or something, or an old distribution thing. Like my new album I just made isn't going to show up on that stuff. I'm like,
you have to submit it to
them. Do you like mail it to them?
They're coming up with a new submission policy that I don't think they've really completed.
The CD Baby yet. And stuff, who gets all our stuff, and everybody's on iTunes and stuff like that. It's easy. But they don't seem to, they don't do it on those
Pandora's run by a thing called the Music Genome Project.
Uh-huh.
And you have to submit the albums to them, and then they put it, subsequently get it on Pandora for you. But you know, when the problem that the music industry faces now regarding pricing is that for all these years, someone, not always the artist, but someone has been making a ton of money.
Yeah.
Off of these albums, and all of a sudden going away.
Not the artist.
Right. And all of a sudden it's disappearing.
The artist getting, a dollar a record or pennies on, they're making it on the road, that kind of
it's
stuff.
It's always been that way, really. It always has. The only people who are getting left out this time are the record executives and the labels and the people who work for them, because their lifestyles, which are notoriously lavish and extreme.
Yeah, even Elton John in his prime, in the set, or the Eagles and guys like that, they still might be just getting like $1.50 an album.
They're lucky if they're getting that.
Yeah, I mean, because in the album, heyday, and so you kind of go, why couldn't you just sell your stuff for $2 or something? I also wanted to point out that recently, we started the P2 Tunes thing on my website.
Mm-hmm.
P2Tunes.com. I said, man, let's just sell every record for like $4. And man, that just sent, at least to my little orbit, a lot of shockwaves, man. I had a lot of artists, a lot of fans come to me and collar me, throw me up against the wall. What are you doing? You're selling yourself short. You're selling out the industry. You're making the rest of us look bad by charging $10 and blah, 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 blah. Man, I just heard it from every side.
Yeah.
And my thinking was, I have a lot of records. And people aren't just going to go buy some old album of mine for $12. It's ridiculous, man.
Yeah.
Now, they might download it for $9 on iTunes. They got some credit there, whatever. But if they come to me, you get it for less. It's $4. And, man, now I see all these boastful emails and proclamations from bands. Ooh, guess what? You can get our new album on Amazon. Almost every new album. MP3 download, $3.99. There, and everybody's like, man, you settled. I can't really remember actually how I settled on that price point. A lot of it had to do with there are fees for downloading. We couldn't do one song. Excuse me while I take a little credit and pat myself on the back a little bit. It's kind of funny. So I've had to remind a couple guys who come to me and go, man, we have this idea to put it on Amazon for $4. I'm kind of, dude, you jumped all over me, man, 2 years ago, and I was on $4. Well, we can't do
see, all of that is...
it's like, dude, it's too expensive. It has to get cheaper. And it'll get cheaper than that. I think that's
$4 is too expensive.
It's still too expensive. I'm even talking about our next record, making it free. We've discussed it. Send in your angry emails now, or your emails of joy, phil@philpritchard.com. Just saying, look, you go to my website, here's every damn song I've ever recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Download it at will. That alleviates you from having to pay any royalties to whoever, because you're not making money on the Bob Dylan song. It's free. We don't get money. Now, you can have some sort of an attractive package. You can have, or if you're not just the guy who wants the free thing, you can get, whatever, the Bullfighter Returns or something, on, 200-gram vinyl. With a CD, poster, lyrics, photograph. I mean, you get a package, man. A cool thing, right?
Right.
For $50.
You get product.
Yeah, product. Whatever. You get the thing. But there's no CD for $5 or $10. Just whatever. Yeah. Just get it free, man. You're just going to fly it anyway. It's free. Listen to it. Love it.
Because music is not a product.
But if you say, man, I'm a fan, Phil. I don't want to just die. I got it free. Fine. I want more. Hey, man, here it is on...
Yeah,
here's the entire Phil Comes Alive collection, man, on 3 vinyl,
in
a box set, whatever. I mean, hey, man, if you're one of those people that needs to own it, that wants to own it, a true fan who's going to have it in their house, we have stuff for you too.
Right.
But as far as just people kind of coming across our stuff, man, you can listen to it.
Yeah.
You can have it on your deal, whatever. So that has been floated. If you have thoughts on that, man, let me know. I mean, post something on our blog page or email me, phil@philpritchard.com. Pricing, man, big issue out there, man. It goes round and round. Lefts, it's you know, and Seth Godin, the other blog I read a lot. Boy, they come into music pricing comes up a lot because it is chaos, man.
It is.
The music business is just an absolute, and it has for years, just reeling. Now they're trying to sue everybody for downloading stuff, you know, Pirate Bay and all that. Yeah. It's a losing battle. It's ridiculous. As I always said, you know, you can't charge $5,000 to sit ringside at a boxing prize fight at Caesar's Palace and then say, what if I want to watch it at home on my TV? Say, hey, man, it's $5,000 to watch it at home? Yeah, man, it's $5,000 to watch the fight. You know, whether I'm buying a CD or downloading off some guy's site, it's just $10 for both. That's asinine. The watching the fight not live at your house or getting an MP3 off some guy's website is it's just a diminished product.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the actual thing. It has to be cheaper. And until the industry wakes up, I mean, they've already lost 10 years of revenue. They could have been making. They could have made deal. They could have made a deal with Napster in 2000. Just said, look, man, we realize we're not going to get our full pricing. Just send us a couple pennies per song downloaded, or a cut of your advertising, so we can pay our artists and go to it. It's not that. And dude, let me tell you what, Aerosmith and these guys would have reaped the benefits of that.
Yep.
I don't care who you are. Because how many people would have been like, how many people download this stuff?
Millions.
And people would have said, oh man, it's you know $10 a month on Napster to join. You can download as much as you want. I mean, they would have had everybody in the world signed up.
Yeah, they would have easily.
A lost opportunity. Not unlike the CD revolution where you had CDs and everybody buys the same. Everybody buys Exodus by Bob Marley again for the 59th time. They already have it on vinyl and 8-track and cassette and whatever. Laser disc. Well, more pricing talk there for you folks. A lot of things to consider. You bands out there. That's why you're not going to go pay $25,000 to some producer, dude. It's a loser. Done. Oh, man. Your uncle will never talk to you again after he lends you that $25,000. So make your albums affordably. Do it yourself on your laptop. Or if you need help, come here to Trinidad. 817-733-5256. Well, man, in our next segment, we got a great letter from our good friend Eric in St. Louis. Had a very very poignant topic that he wanted to see discussed on the podcast, talking about music and politics. Nary the twain shall meet. Where do we fall on that? You and me, Kurt South. We'll get into politics and music when we come back.
You can be the Skywalker and I'll be Indiana Jones. The jungle, the likes I've never seen. My whip and my knife clear the way. You better keep that lightsaber handy there.
Luke fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast. Here with me is my good friend, confidant, cohort, Kurt South. How you doing, Kurt?
Doing well.
Well, we're here in our middle segment where we try to get to some fan email. Thanks for sending the emails. Phil@philpritchard.com. Keep them coming. Let us know what you'd like to hear us discuss. Well, our good friend up there in St. Louis, Missouri, Eric Albers, friend of ours. I think he comes to the Flatland Jam, Rosebud Theater. He's been to some of those shows up there. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Big fan there in the Midwest. He writes to us, and I'm going to read from this. I'm always paraphrasing fan mail here on the show.
Reading directly.
Very well written, I thought, so I thought it deserved to be read on the air. So here we go. From Eric. Eric writes, what do you guys think about musicians' role with politics and social causes? There has been a long connection with musicians like Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie bringing awareness to our social issues. Even Johnny Cash had his causes. But now we see musicians showing up at the two political conventions, having public opinions about who we should be voting for. Love the podcast. Keep them up. Thanks for doing Warren Zevon. I appreciate him adding that. That's one album I never got around to listening to, and so I bought it the other day and love it. See you at the Flatland Jam. Eric Albers, thanks for writing in, my friend. We'll see you at the Flatland Jam as well in late September. Phil Pritchard and the full band will be up there playing with Jason Boland and others. Bacon Fat, great show.
Bacon Fat?
Yes.
Is that the name of the band?
JW's brother's band, dude. They're going to make a record here, I think.
Richard's band is called Bacon Fat?
B-A-K-I-N apostrophe fat. All covers, but working on originals.
Well, I'll
Who
be
knows?
Damned.
Oh, man, wouldn't it be great if they came and recorded here? Oh, my goodness gracious. The great J.C. Marshall, J.W.'s dad on drums.
He is great.
Never plays a straight beat, just plays around the beat. Around the beat. Well, boy, this gets into, how do we dive into this? Politics and music. Do they one and the same? Should they be? Kurt's gonna just offend everyone with his answer here. I'm bracing myself.
Brace yourself.
Oh my goodness gracious! Here's something kind of interesting. I was forwarded a provocative title of a book by my brother-in-law, the great Rick Wittenbrecker in Austin. He knows I'm a big Beatles fan. Well, there's some book out that says how the Beatles destroyed popular music.
I'm already interested.
He said, just starting a little fire. I just read the little introductory paragraph on it, and the conclusion. The guy, and his point was, and I saw his point, pointing out that when the Beatles got going, Chuck Berry, Elvis, and when the Beatles got going, they were entertainers, live music entertainers, dog and pony show, man. Dance stuff. You go to see the Beatles, you can dance. Or Elvis, it's screaming and dancing, it's rock and roll, it's fun. And man, the Beatles were really the first to say, we're not going to tour. We're just going to make albums live in the studio. And they quit being entertainers, per se, and started becoming artists.
Self-important jackasses.
Well, my response to Rick was, if they did ruin popular music, we are all the better for it. That'd be my argument. But I digress. It's an interesting point, and that kind of feeds into this whole political deal.
Mm-hmm.
Is really maybe before the Beatles, people didn't care what. No one asked Elvis about his political opinions, did they? In the 50s,
no.
Probably not.
No,
he was some guy from the. He was, I don't know. He's a dance guy or something. And
you just reduced Elvis to a dance guy.
Well, no. I'm talking to like the political press, the media
yeah.
would not go, where does he stand on welfare?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he's just like, I don't know. I'm out here rocking the house. What are you going to talk? So people didn't look to musicians for that kind of deal. And man, the Beatles, the drug culture, the late 60s, people were asking those guys because they showed through their music some sort of social conscious awareness kind of deal. Oh, man, when Dylan got going and all that. Big time. Although he tried to kind of shuck off that responsibility his whole life and saying, look, I'm just writing songs, telling things the way I see it. Where do you come down on this, man? Politics. Gosh, you can't turn on a political convention or some ad without some dude showing you how to recycle something or something and telling you who to vote for. Where do you come in on it, Kurt? Come on.
I think it's one of the most offensive things to me. Honestly, it turns me off.
It does. You don't think, man, I didn't like that guy, but now he's on this. Now he's telling me what to think,
well,
and who to vote
for,
so I'm going to throw myself behind him.
Well, I agree with the title of that book, How the Beatles Killed Popular Music.
All right. Well, maybe that's a subject for another show.
Well, no, I'm just saying this ties in directly to what we're talking about.
It does in a way.
Man, when I look at old interviews of John Lennon just being a self-important ass, talking down to the rest of the world like he had answers that everyone else was too slow and not evolved.
But don't you think he was being asked those questions? People were starting to look to him for that kind of reaction. It's a chicken or the egg kind of deal.
Yeah, that's true. But I think there's a certain amount of pretense and arrogance involved.
And it started somewhere around Sergeant Pepper was maybe just the atomic bomb.
I write songs.
We don't just
play
dance around and play the guitar as an entertain man.
We're
going to expand your mind.
Yeah.
And save the world with what we're doing.
Yeah. And I think
people probably didn't expect that of music before 1967.
And the world was a better place for it too. Huh? The world was a better place when people didn't expect that.
Well, but you had Dylan. You had, he was around in the early 60s, little protest songs and stuff. Woody Guthrie way back before then. But they were just – I mean, that's like saying the blues had been around. Or, you know, I mean, it's just
interesting
question, man.
I just think that
– But you're not – so you're turned off by the guy at the political rally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fleetwood Mac playing Clinton's inauguration –
I want Fleetwood Mac
Toby
to put
Keith
out rumors.
Putting a boot in the ass at George Bush's thing or something. Yeah, both sides, equally offensive. What's he doing? See, I feel that way, too. I really feel like it doesn't come down to...
I think it's a shame to sully something as great as music with something as lowly as politics.
Etch that down on the wall. I want you to turn around and just etch that above the door here at Trinidad.
It's already
got a knife in there. Carve it in.
Well, and I'll tell you who has really... turn me against
him. Uh-oh. Careful.
Bruce Springsteen.
Careful. Oh, Kurt.
Dude,
A thousand hearts break throughout Radio Free Texas land.
Springsteen.
Oh, goodness gracious.
I don't need him for information. I don't need him to try and sway me in any way.
Right.
I don't need him giving me his views on the world. What I need him doing is standing up on a piano while Clarence Clemens plays a sax solo.
Playing Born
screaming
to Run.
Born to Run.
What's wrong with that? Why can't you stick to that? How come that's like, it's kind of like the good actor.
Yeah.
Russell Crowe.
Starts a band.
Keanu Reeves. Well, I want to be a singer. Like Billy Bob. It's just, not that they don't have any right to do that. Of course they do. But it not only scratch your head a bit. Yeah, the music isn't that great. We have other guys. We have Springsteen, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to pigeonhole anybody. I was like, well, man, doesn't anybody have a right to do something or say what they think? Absolutely. But I'll tell you what, at the risk of turning off some of your listeners,
I have the right.
Don't you think?
I have the right to hate it just as much as you have the right to do it. Hey, you can do and say whatever you want, but you just don't bitch when you catch the flack that it's going to cause. And I really believe that it's a natural progression of fame and stardom.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, John Lennon got to the point where he was just simply the biggest star in the world.
And he told everybody we're more popular than
Jesus. He was.
Yeah. I mean, stating a fact at the time, it was sadly.
He's already accomplished everything he could. I mean, where else do you go? So they start looking for other ways to, you know, they think, man, I'm this huge worldwide entity now.
Everyone cares what I think.
Everyone asks me
what I think about this and this and this.
I have all the money in the world.
Right.
What's next? And unfortunately, a lot of them, that's not good enough. And, you know, the ego gets fed as these things go along.
Right.
And then you turn into Bono. Which Bono, I believe, is a good-hearted, good person.
Sure.
But, man, I hear you two now, and I want to walk into oncoming traffic because I have heard so much from him outside of music that I no longer care about the music. And I'm the same way with Springsteen.
I think it's most effective, man, where you say it in the music because that's always fair game.
And just let the music
that's
talk
fair
for
game.
You.
Dude, I mean, like, everybody knows where Neil Young stands politically. Man, he's already said it in his songs, man, in Ohio and Southern Man and whatever else he's got. Man, his position is there, you know. You know, I always go back to Dylan on stuff like this. I told some young songwriters the other day who didn't know anything about Bob Dylan. I said, dude, all roads lead to Dylan. You start thinking, man, Chris Knight's really great or Steve Earle. Just keep following the thread. It all goes back to him.
Yeah.
And before Dylan you had, it goes back to the old folk tradition. But at least in your current consciousness – there's kind of Dylan, and man, he made a great. I think he probably did it better than most.
Yeah.
As far as I mean, he of course a lot of political fire in his songs,
yeah.
But not so much political. It's just social, telling stories that maybe were hard to hear, and a lot of
he's telling his opinion
with a lot of truth.
That's okay.
But early on, man, all the Democratic convention or whoever it was, tried to give him some big award for being social causes, where he showed up drunk and pissed everybody off, and by saying, "I don't even know what this is for," and like walked out.
He forever shied
away from stuff like that, and just said, "Man, I'm not an insider. I'm an outsider. I'm an artist." And man, that is, I think, ultimately the role of the artist.
Yeah.
Be the outsider looking in. Don't be on someone's team. As soon as you put yourself on someone's team, you're against someone else's team.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying artists need to appeal to everybody, but I do think the great ones, like a star in the sky, man, they're not just shining their light on something. You don't have to look at it if you don't want to, but it's there. And it's just, it stands alone. The great songs, the great artists. And man, the more you tie yourself to some sort of a cause or something, like we talked about music scenes, disco or something.
You.
And man, it's the same in politics, man.
Well,
recycling, global warming, whatever it is, man, the war, at some point it's just not going to be cool to talk about it. Man, you've made all these records. You're on record and on tape and on all these talk shows, you know, beating people over the head about it. And now it turns out maybe it wasn't as whatever important or true. You're just, man, just write the song and play it. And man, let people make up their own minds. It's very, it can be browbeating, I guess.
Have enough respect for the audience,
for the listener,
to realize that they can come to their own conclusion. Like Neil Young did the Living with War album.
Yeah.
And man, has Neil Young ever fought in a war? The answer is no. So who in the hell is he to even approach the subject? Yeah, of course he's entitled to his opinion. Yeah, and you don't have to fight a war to know that it sucks and it's horrible. But at the same time, know your place and understand that to people who have fought in wars, that maybe they would like to kick your ass for talking about it.
That's right. Strong words, Kurt Sell.
But
I see what you're saying.
But I also think it's very disingenuous for Bono.
Plus, he's Canadian. He tells us who to vote for.
Exactly.
Is he a citizen here now?
Neil
Young?
Who cares?
I was getting mad at Bono. He was always so critical of some of our presidents and things. I'm like,
he's
from Ireland. He's not from
here.
And
he lives in France. He's a man with no country.
You know, fine.
I think it's extremely disingenuous for Bono, Bruce Springsteen, Sheryl Crow, any of these people to act like saving the world is so important to them now. Well, if it was so damn important to you, then why didn't you start off and just go into the Peace Corps or just become a political activist when you were 20 years old instead of playing rock and roll? And the answer is, it doesn't pay as well.
That's right.
So now you're like, well, I'm going to go save the world. Well, you know, come on.
It's if you don't try to do something like that, you're seen as greedy or that you don't care. If you just go, I mean, what if they went to some of those artists and said, hey, man, what do you really care about? What if they just go, man, I just care about making great music and making money. I mean, people would just throw that guy in the stockade for saying that.
No, I wouldn't.
You got to go out. You got to go, man. If you get to that level, man, you got to show up in I don't know. You got to talk about something, greenhouse gases, and give away money on Oprah or something.
I know. Well, you know, and it drives me.
You know, what if Dillard just goes, hell, you know, I'm trying to make a lot of money and have fun. If you said that, he'd be thrown under.
Well, I think it's unfair to the average person that Lynyrd Skynyrd and Charlie Daniels and John Rich from Big and Rich are playing all these things for the conservative movement.
Right.
And then you have, you know, the Grateful Dead and all these other people.
Fleetwood Mac or something. Yeah, right.
Fleetwood Mac doing the stuff. So it polarizes the country because...
Like you can't be a fan of both.
They overly simplify the thing as if, you know, you watch the Republican National Convention and Big and Rich is up there looking ridiculous. So people just go, well, that's what Republicans are. It's a bunch of boot stomping rednecks.
Yeah, that's right.
And Democrats are all over there in San Francisco, you know, eating sushi and rolling herb, man. They're just smoking dope and listening to the Dead. And man, that's just no purpose.
It seems the artist would just have to stay out of it, man.
No purpose and. You know, there's a pretty long list of artists who have gotten really
politically
involved.
Unless you're just like giving money to cancer research or something. I don't know, something
like
that.
But do it quietly.
Do it quietly. Yeah, don't tell everybody you're doing it.
If you really want to do good and make a difference, then, and you have the means to do that, you can do that without calling a press conference, going on Oprah, standing up on CNN, and making an ass out of yourself. You can do all of those things. And nothing pisses me off more than when they choose to do it in the public eye. And they choose.
That's true,
it's a sign of arrogance. It's a sign of being out of touch with the people who are really down there making America work.
Yeah.
And I'm equally mad at both sides.
Yeah. I find myself saying I don't get offended by one more than the other. I just it's always seemed out of place to me.
Yeah. Very out of place.
Now, you know, I think if the theme is really general, it works. You know, you could say Johnny Cash had a real spiritual, and you travel with Billy Graham or something. Yeah, I guess, you know, that could offend a lot of people, but, you know, who are not inclined in that way. But I don't know. You wouldn't say he has a big message with his music or anything. He just, but there's a spiritual sense to him.
Yeah.
Dylan the same way.
But I feel the same way about religion getting involved in politics. I think it's bad that, you know, churches, you know, push one side of the political spectrum.
Right.
You know,
right.
I don't think God's sitting up there going, man, I wish those preachers would get involved in the process. Because that, at that point, that changes things too.
And music, to a degree, it's the voice of the spirit, as they say.
Yeah. And I just think it's
like poets, you know, they didn't back certain kings or something for.
No.
For king and elected. What is a king? He is. What's the word I'm looking for?
He
inherits the throne.
Yeah.
He abdicates. He steps off. Whatever. Yeah, the artist, man, needs to float above, man. I mean, did Shakespeare back anybody? You know, you know, I know he was friends with the kings and queens of England, but, you know, he was... I think you do have to remove yourself from it a little bit.
And that doesn't mean...
To be taken seriously, I think, ultimately, because those causes and those things...
They come and they change, and they do.
And so that's what I was saying, unless the cause is something general, hey, we want peace in our time, or love your brother, or...
That's
great. I don't know, don't drink and drive, or help someone who needs help, or... something general is good, but if you start getting real specific about... where your troops are and, you know, how important it is to, you know, wash your garbage before you throw it away or something.
Yeah.
That can start to just be like, what? What is he? Why does he feel like he needs to just keep telling me this? Just make records, you know?
I've always been a really big James McMurtry fan. But, man, the last few years when he just takes it as far as...
It can be browbeating. It can be browbeating.
He's got a song called Cheney's Toys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Man, at this point, who the hell thinks Dick Cheney is a grandfatherly nice guy? No one likes him. You're not shedding any sort of intellectual light on this. And, yeah, we're
involved. No, that is not even in office anymore. I mean, that song, that album, it's stuck somewhere now. It doesn't have a lot of relevance.
Yeah. I love McMurtry.
Me too. But it starts to... whereas the song like "Can't Make It Here Anymore," it's
timeless.
It's a larger theme.
Yeah.
Now, if he'd have just said "Bush makes it so he can't make it anymore," it would lose all relevance.
Yeah,
well, he's not in the office anymore. Songs like "A Hard Rain's a Gonna Fall," "Imagine," that they're. They're broad. They're the themes of Romeo and Juliet. It's just unrequited love. It has to be broad. And I guess when you stand on a stage with some candidate that tomorrow could be caught with a hooker, man, you're putting your neck in a noose, man.
Yeah.
But you're probably doing it, just like you said, because it's good exposure, it's a popular deal, and it's going to be good publicity for the tour coming up. And, man, you ultimately hang yourself. I really think that's probably true.
And you feel like that it's a mutually beneficial deal for the candidate and the artist.
Exactly.
You know, and this artist can sway his fans to vote for us. And
it's kind of like using horns on your album. Do it at your peril.
At your own peril.
Stand with a political candidate at your peril, Kurt South. I think that's what we can say.
Well, here's a good example.
Yeah.
Charlie Daniels.
Yeah.
Who is now a staunch right-wing supporter.
Yeah.
And I love Charlie Daniels. But back in the 70s, he backed Jimmy Carter, who is on record as being one of the most liberal left-wing presidents.
Well, he's an old Georgia guy. You know, but
you're saying, you know, back then you were just far left and now you're just far right. But that's the thing. People change, times change, causes change.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So you're just going to come out at the end just kind of looking like just somebody who's trying to get the attention.
Floats around or something.
Like it's not enough.
And it can't hurt you. I don't think it ever really helps you. I think that's, yeah. Man, I think that's probably
and
right.
And I honestly have a problem with artists who continually tell me how we need to make America better and it needs to change and it's so bad here right now. Well, how bad is it when you're making a good living in a country playing music and following your dream? How bad is it?
That's a good question to be asked.
How bad is it? You know, and I would venture to say that most of these people have never lived somewhere where they didn't have freedom or they didn't have the creature comforts that come with being an American citizen. So
right.
A lot of times these political opinions and these social statements are pulled out of the air. They don't come from any point of reference or any experience. It's
yeah.
just, man, we think it could be better. Okay, well, tell me how. How do you know it's so bad?
Well, man, you are treading on thin ice. Again, I thought a very that's a tough subject to get your head around. Politics yeah. and music, because it is a and you know, let's face it, music doesn't get the attention maybe in the press. It doesn't drive the culture, as we say a lot on this show, and as Bob Lefsetz has said before. Doesn't drive the culture. Politics, of course, is always going to drive the culture to some extent.
Yeah.
So you do wonder about the motives of some, you know, guy who had very minimal schooling and has done a lot of drugs, and now he's going to tell us how to improve our lives.
All of a sudden, he's an expert on world trade. Like, really? Where did you learn? Did you learn that backstage?
So there you go.
At the Roxy?
Yeah. I think the great artists, the guys who do have answers, not answers, but maybe who ask great questions. They do recuse themselves from it, man. They do stand apart from it. Eric Albers, St. Louis, Missouri, thanks for your thoughtful and well-written email. Provocative indeed. We'll have to touch on that again here in future podcasts. We'll come up here in the vault, man. We're going to talk about a band, one of my favorite bands. Get raked over the coals sometimes by people going, man, you're always doing these albums from like the 60s and 70s, man. Do something recent. Do something recent. Well, this is pretty recent. A pretty recent record. When was that?
Like 01, 02.
01, 02. Just a great. The last Jayhawks record.
Yeah.
Rainy Day Music.
Classic.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
An instant classic.
Instant classic. Be Reborn. We'll be back with the Jayhawks in just a minute.
You're lonesome in the morning. In the morning where you lay. Toss your head against the window. Beats form like crooked trains. You look so young. Have you ever been afraid? You look so young. And I'm feeling so ashamed. Selfish thoughts and selfish reasons lead to my own demise.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast. With me is Kurt South. How you doing, South?
Good. How's it going?
Oh, it's going quite well, quite well. Man, oh, tough political discussion there. Politics and music. Oil and water, I say.
It was. That was hard-hitting
stuff. If you got something good to say, say it in your songs. Don't stand up there and beat me over the head. You have the biggest... Think about it, man. Musicians have the greatest platform there is. Words, music, you know, how it's produced and presented to people. But so many, they can't get enough across maybe in that format, so they... I don't know.
Just give me Jerry Lee Lewis drunk and high, pounding a piano.
Yeah, man. What cause is he supporting? Nothing.
Hookers and whiskey. That's
what right.
He's supporting. That is what he's supporting.
That's a candidate you could get behind, Kurt South.
Jerry Lee Lewis
for president.
2012.
Boy, bring
him
this country.
On.
That's right.
Bring on the killer.
Bring on the killer. Well, man, we're going to get into a band here. We've alluded to him a couple of times in the show when we talk about badass gear, great songs, underappreciated bands that you need to know more about. The Great Jayhawks. Now, these guys came out of Minneapolis. So many of these bands come out of these cold weather towns. You've got just Minneapolis. The main guys, you had Mark Olson, who's no longer with them now, but the great Gary Louris. He's kind of got the horn-rimmed glasses and the wild, crazy hair. Plays an SG through like a Vox AC-30. I read a great Louris quote one time. He's got a very distinctive guitar style, real fuzzy and all over the place. Then a great singer-songwriter.
Similar P2 guitar style.
Yes. And I read him talking about how he plays. And he said, technique? Like, question mark? He just goes, I'm not into that. He goes, I'm into feel, sloppiness, and tone. That just summed up his whole style. I was like, man, that's a guy I could get behind.
Yep.
Feel, sloppiness, and tone. And, man, Louris does it in droves, man, on great albums like Hollywood Town Hall, Tomorrow the Green Grass.
That's a good one.
The Great Smile, produced by Bob Ezrin.
Yeah.
Smile when you're down and out. Any Jayhawks album you go pick up. I think they made 7 mm-hmm. official releases. There's a couple of bootleg kind of B-side deals.
None of them suck.
None of them suck, man. I mean, harmony-driven, song-driven. Of course, they say harmony. I'm always struck when I hear them. The two guys kind of sing the same part a lot.
Yeah.
You ever notice that?
Yeah.
I'm kind of like, man, they're not really harmonizing. They kind of sing the same thing.
Yeah.
And man, their last record they made on is Rainy Day Music. I think it was 2000. I was looking on the computer earlier. 2003, maybe? 2002? They've never really broken up. I think they kind of did. The band members really started to change. Olsen wasn't with the band anymore. I was always more of a fan of Gary Louris vocal, and the songs he wrote were always the ones that really caught my eye.
Yeah.
Well, they were Mark Perlman, Tim O'Regan, also in the band for a long time. So I don't know if they're officially broken up. I think they just don't have a deal. I know Louris tours solo a lot now.
Well, yeah, Louris.
And with Olsen now. Don't need.
Well, they just played in Dallas a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Olsen and Louris at Sons of Herman Hall. But Louris just put out a solo album, and Tim O'Regan, the drummer, he put out a solo album a couple years ago.
Yeah, and he had a couple good songs on some of these albums.
He wrote Tampa to Tulsa on this album, which is...
Oft covered, although I was a little offended when I saw, I think it was Macon Grayson did it.
Yeah.
They maybe do some Jayhawks, and they played that song, like the one song the drummer sings. I'm like, dude, come on.
That might be the best song in the album.
You think so?
Yes.
Oh, I couldn't disagree more.
Dude.
It's all right. Tampa to Tulsa.
Great melody, awesome lyrics. Yeah, it's pretty. It sucks.
Please don't ask.
Come on, how's that not one of the best songs on the album?
Man, it doesn't beat. It doesn't beat Angeline and Stumbling Through the Dark and You Look So Young. Man, it opens with this. Stumbling Through the Dark with Matthew Sweet singing on it.
Yeah,
Stumbling Through the Dark.
You're so in love, little girl, so much in love, little girl, running around in circles, why, you know it's a crime, no less, no more than a rose, no less, no more than a rose, try to attach a meaning.
There it is, man. Just harmony, the jangly guitars, all the stuff you're going to hear on any Pritchett-produced Trinidad deal. Jangly guitars, a lot of tambourine shakers and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Known for all their vintage gear and badass stuff. Feel, sloppiness, and tone. The Jayhawks. You know, one of those tracks on that album that when I'm in here trying to mix a guy's album, if they're going for that kind of rootsy, open-ended, you know, kind of old-school sound, but with, you know, with modern, you know, production accoutrements kind of thing. Man, I go to that one, The Eyes of Sarah Jane.
Yeah.
It's got that opening, that dong, down, you know, just the guitar with the offset with the acoustic, then the B3 comes in, and the way the drums come in there. I mean, any one of my recordings here, you have your acoustic, your electric bass, you know, your Hammond organ and your drums coming in. And I'll be mixing a song, and I'll go back into my iTunes, man, and punch up Eyes of Sarah Jane. Just to see how that track comes in,
yeah,
and where my mix compares, and I can kind of go, oh, my electric guitar is too bright, or my drums are too loud, they're too pingy, you know? Yeah. Yeah, I mean the bass needs to be just a little softer in the mix. So just, man, the recordings of the Jayhawks, you know, of course Bob Ezrin produced Smile, the one before Rainy Day Music, which is also outstanding. And then this one was done by, I believe, George Draculius did a mm-hmm. bunch of them. Or he did Hollywood Town Hall, I think, and Tomorrow the Green Grass. You know, man, just total analog, you know, great stuff. You know, Stolle was really into the Jayhawks, the great Jason Stolle, full band drummer back in the, you know, Cool and Unusual Punishment. Everybody remembers Stolle beating the front head of the drum during Skywalker. Come on, man. Of course, I always knew about the Jayhawks. Lived in Austin. You know, you had the great KGSR radio station down there. We used to play the What's on KGSR game driving through Austin.
I still play that game.
Yeah. The game was for those great guys. Game. KGSR is the biggest station in Austin, but very, very AAA. They'll play anything. But they had their favorites, yes. We've noticed over the years. So we're driving through Austin, we go, all right, what's on KGSR? And you could say, man, of course, you'd go, man, Bob Schneider or Patty Griffin, Ray Wiley Hubbard, yeah. Something. So, you know, somebody would never really win. And so I knew the Jayhawks, and I think I had Tomorrow the Green Grass on cassette. And then I lost track of them a little bit, but Stolle showed up in the van, man. His dad was a huge Jayhawks fan. And man, he had Smile, and then when Rainy Day Music came out, and man, we played those two albums to death, man. I mean, to death. That was just what you put on after a show, your ears still ringing, soaked with sweat, you're driving back to the hotel, we throw on Rainy Day Music, we throw on Smile, and just, man, everything about it, the sound, the songs. We even did a version of I'm Gonna Make You Love Me off of Smile.
Y'all did?
I'm gonna make you love me. I'm gonna dry your tears. I can't remember her name. They had that girl in the band on that album. Some great, really good harmonies on Smile. Oh, I'd have to look up her name. Anyway, a lot of different revolving guys in the band. But
yeah,
every time you saw pictures of the Jayhawks, there was like snow on the ground, long hair,
just big wearing coats, scarves and coats.
Yeah, with like like an SG and a beat up Vox amp. Just the Jayhawks, man. They just had this thing around them, man, much like bands like Wilco or something like that.
Yeah.
Of course, Loris is also in Golden Smog. Who?
Yes.
You have any of their stuff?
Yeah.
They got some good stuff.
Yeah.
They put out Another Fine Day. They put out a record about every few years.
Blood on the Slacks was the
last.
Yeah.
God, they had that great song. Oh, geez. I have to look it up. I apologize. But look up Golden Smog because that's Jeff Tweedy, the frontman from... Wilco, of course.
Dave Perner.
Soul Asylum, yeah. And Gary Loris from the Jayhawks.
Perlman's also a...
And Perlman, I think some of the Jayhawks guys play drums and bass. And who else? Is that it? I think it's just the three of them mainly. Golden Smog. It's kind of a side project. They get together and throw... And there's some wild stuff on there. They got that song, Frying Pan Eyes.
Yeah.
Frying Pan Eyes.
Often covered by my brother, I
believe. Oh, is he Frying Pan Eyes? Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's good. Yeah, man. So the Jayhawks, man, rainy day music. They're, man, maybe they're swan song. I hope not, but of course I've learned over the years, South, no one ever retires. No one ever is really gone.
They need the money.
Garth, man, is he really gone? He's never going to play again? Oh, it's too bad. Oh, yeah, right. Till Jerry Jones throws open the roof of the new Cowboy Stadium.
He'll be there.
Plops down $12 million bucks and says, dude, you don't want to play? I thought maybe you'd, or whatever, some promoter. No, you don't want to go out there, Garth? Happy to just sit around on your farm and ride around in your Bigfoot golf cart or whatever the hell he does.
Watch
on the
Trisha
way
Trisha Yearwood do step aerobics. Come
on. Yeah, just, God, damn, taking out the garbage. He's, you know, at some point he's going to go, can't we get the guys and go play some shows? You know, no
Call
one ever retires.
Tell him to put the band back together.
Oh, man. So check it out, man. The rainy day music, the Jayhawks. I hope that goes out there to Blake Walker, man. He's been so disappointed recently. Just whipping my ass about the 70s and 60s. Oh, my gosh. Want me to talk about grunge or something? I don't know.
Next week.
That would be some grunge. You know,
Soundgarden.
Well, we talked about doing Appetite for Destruction. And of course, an obvious choice.
Yeah.
But sort of to set it into context, maybe where you first heard it and I first heard it. Maybe we'll do that on the next podcast, man.
Man, that'd be a good one.
Get into some rocking stuff. Some 80s balls-of-the-wall stuff. Well, that is the podcast for this episode. I'm Phil Pritchett. Kurt South has been here with us, folks. Thank you so much, Kurt.
Thanks for having me.
Email us, phil@philpritchett.com. Thank you, Eric Albers. And others for emailing in all the time. Let us know what you would like to hear discussed or addressed on the podcast. Thanks to all of our good friends at Radio Free Texas. And for all of you listening out there, call me here at the studio. Come record or book Phil Pritchett and the Full Band, 817-733-5256. Thanks again, Kurt. We'll see you guys next week on the podcast. Take care.